welcome to episode 75 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, we talk all things Toronto sport with John McCauley from the Toronto Maple Leafs, Raptors, and Toronto FC.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who crafts most of these intros in airport lounges, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. My name is Sean Callinan from Sports Geek. You can find me on the Twitter at Sean Callinan or at Sports Geek. Please take the time during the show, send me a tweet, tell me where and when you're listening to the podcast. I really do appreciate everyone who is listening, but I really do appreciate the feedback. You can always get me on email, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com. I found it really, really useful to be getting the old school feedback from people, and I really do appreciate when people make the effort to either send me an email or to reply to a Sports Geek News to say that they're listening and that they've found previous episodes valuable. This week, it's been a long overdue catch up with John McCauley, who runs all things digital and marketing in Toronto with the Maple Leafs and the Raptors in the NHL and the NBA respectively, and also the arenas that and facilities that are part of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment Group, being Air Canada Centre as well as Toronto FC. So he's got a really unique perspective working with multiple properties in multiple sports. So really good to have a chat with him, caught up with him, met him in person at SEAT in Miami. Really enjoyed his discussion at SEAT. So I'll have a chat with him today. And as he said, when we got off the phone, it's very easy for two guys like us just to prattle on and talk about all things sports and tech. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did having a chat with John. A couple of quick announcements before the show. I'm very lucky to have a special guest coming down to Melbourne next week, Christine Stoffel. You've heard me talk about Christine before, and she's been on the podcast before as part of SEAT Conference. She's actually coming down to Melbourne next week. We're doing some planning for the SEAT, the two SEAT conferences this year, SEAT London, which is March 17 at Lords, and then in July, SEAT in San Francisco. So we're going to be doing some planning around the agenda and the content and the marketing around it. So while she is in Melbourne, we're going to be checking out some of the sports that are on at the minute. We've got the Big Bash, the Asian Cup, and obviously the Australian Open will be starting next week. So we're going to be taking a few of those events. But since she's going to be in town, I thought it was a great way to kick off Sports Business Melbourne. The meetup group that I've started, again, I think meetup.com is an underutilized networking or a social network. I almost think it's a social network, the amount of people that are gravitating towards it to find new people to meet and engage with. So I've started Sports Business Melbourne. If you work in sports in Melbourne or you want to work in sports in Melbourne, you're more than welcome to come. It's going to be on Tuesday the 20th. Of January. It's going to be at my friend Steve Vallis's The Honey Bar in South Melbourne. We've run two sports business networking nights, very similar, and running them in conjunction with Russell Scabetti's SB nights. And I always say I'm going to run more. So this year is one of my KPIs for this year is to set up that group and run more than just one. So we've run one in the previous two Januaries in 2013 and 2014. And so we're going to kick it off again in 2015. But I'm going to run most likely quarterly around just to get the Melbourne sports business community, which is, you know, which is vast and thrives with the amount of sports teams and sports properties and organisations that are based out of Melbourne. Love to see you all there and have a chat about what we're all planning for the year ahead. So that's it for this intro. So you can grab, you know, if you go to Sports Geek HQ, the prompts to go to Sports Business Melbourne will be there, but you can simply go to meetup.com/sportsbusinessmelbourne and you will find the group. So join the group so you know when it is, and hopefully we'll see you next Tuesday at the Honey Bar. So with no further ado, because John and I do have a long chat, I hope you enjoy it. This is my chat with John McCauley from the Toronto Raptors, or from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, I should say, because it's more than just the Raptors and the Leafs, on the Sports Geek Podcast.
Very happy to welcome my first guest of 2015, all the way in Toronto, John McCauley. Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Thank you very much, Sean.
So, John, you're the Senior Director of Marketing at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. It fills out a LinkedIn bio, but tell us exactly what that role entails.
Well, we've got a pretty unique structure here at Maple Leaf Sports, where we're the owners of multiple teams. We've got the Toronto Maple Leafs of the NHL, the Toronto Raptors of the NBA, Toronto FC of Major League Soccer, and we have an AHL club, an AHL hockey club, the Toronto Marlies, that we operate. We own and operate three buildings: Air Canada Centre, Ricoh Coliseum, and BMO Field, where our soccer club plays. And we own some properties and a sports bar, and it's definitely the largest sports and entertainment company in Canada, and we rival MSG in the States for some of the bigger ones in North America, that's for sure. But my role within that is, we're in charge of all of the customer facing platforms as it relates to each of those teams. So my teams are not solely focused on one of those brands. They're focused on all of them, and we have people dedicated to each of those brands within the appropriate platforms. But it really comes down to three main pillars. One, which is traditional marketing services, creative, signage, that sort of thing, and traditional business intelligence, CRM, database marketing, that sort of thing, and then what would be all of the digital platforms, social, mobile, websites, and video production. So we have a big group here. We have a group now of about 60 people that are in my group that are span those four teams and all three of those pillars. And we made that change about 18 months ago to amalgamate all of our customer facing folks in one spot so that we could really pinpoint our message and really start to communicate with our fans in a more clear and concise manner.
I mean, that's a really big advantage. A lot of people I talk to are still in that silo of they're in digital, and it hasn't been as pervasive going across all of the departments. But the fact that you're in charge of and in those three pillars is you've got the traditional and the CRM and digital. They're pretty well over those 18 months. You've been working to really integrate those three, so they're not working as three separate entities doing their own thing, not communicating.
Yeah, no, it's really been a really fun time for us, because we have, in most organizations they are siloed in that way. There's digital, there's broadcast, there's CRM, there's, and they all have different bosses and they all report to different people within an organization, let alone one with us that has multiple logos. So our structure is unique, but it's worked out really well in the short time that we've had it this way. And, it's not to be forgotten that we also have brand marketing teams that we work with to bring the experiences within each of the brands to life. So there's folks that work specifically on the Toronto Raptors, Toronto FC, Toronto Marlies, Toronto Maple Leafs that then, I would say, aggregate all of the marketing opportunities and put forward the direction for each of the brands. And then we advise, help, execute all of those plans as a big collective, all under one boss, our VP of marketing and communication, Shannon Osford.
And I guess the beauty of it, having all of these properties as well as the venues, is that what works for one can easily translate and be rebranded and tweaked for each fan base and translated and moved across to the other one you don't have to be bleeding edge on all of those platforms.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a cloner. There's no doubt about it. I'd like to, you know, I've tried things out on each of the brands and then imported them over after they've been successful, or decided to kill them after they've not been successful. It's definitely an advantage and to have that. And it's also, we've done it in a way that we have the ability to have these foundational elements across all of the brands, but then within those foundational elements, we have people that are completely immersed in that particular brand, so that it does have its own feel and tone and experience that is designed for that sport or in the brand of that particular team.
One of the things I wanted to discuss with you, lucky enough to catch up with you finally in person in Miami at the SEEK conference, and I really enjoyed your discussion with the guys from 1UP around the app that you did for the Maple Leafs, and really on the theme of the power of live and how you're driving fans into your app and engaging them with the app. You want to take us a little bit through that story and how that app developed and how important engaging the fans around the live event and the live action, whether it be in stadium or at home, is for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this. I've been in the digital media space since 2000. And, you know, over the years, this pattern just seems to reveal itself, is that, you know, game days and when sports teams are live, people are talking about them. Go figure, right?
Yep.
So concentrate, you know, we just kept formulating this content strategy and this live strategy around why try to make people talk about our brands when it's not, you know, when they're not, there's not really a reason to talk about them. Let's talk about them more when there is a reason, and then and try to get the let's say the snowball rolling down the hill a lot bigger when the momentum is in our favor, right? And that strategy has helped us a lot, because, you know, most sports teams, you know, there's limited resources, there's limited marketing dollars to support initiatives. Why put your dollars behind one that's always going to happen on a non-game day? We want to put all of our money and resources into things that are going to get the momentum and we're going to be part of the conversation and part of the experiences that our fans are having when they're having the most fun. And that's always during a live event. And, you know, we just got to chit-chatting with the 1UP guys and, you know, they believe in that philosophy too. They believe in mobile, that is a mobile experience that's based on time and location, something that is a big strategy of mine, and it just got us thinking, you know, we need to create an experience that changes in mobile, that isn't just a static regurgitation of the web page, but a living, breathing thing that changes and puts things in front of people when the live experience dictates. If I'm sitting on my couch, you know, it should know that, the app should know that, and I pull up Maple Leafs mobile and it's giving me a second screen experience, because if chances are, if I'm nowhere near the arena and I'm pulling up Maple Leafs mobile and there's a game on, chances are I'm watching it. I probably should have that second screen experience pop up for that particular person. If I walked into the building and I pull up Maple Leafs mobile, we should be making your life easier through utility of things like, you know, where's the shortest line, and you know, how do you all of that stuff that make a fan's life easier for somebody who might be in the building for the first time, but also engage them based on what's happened. Oh, Phil Kessel just scored a hat trick. Great. How do we send alerts to the people that are fans of Phil Kessel and are in the building tonight, and tell them that, you know, tell that segment of people that, you know, give them an offer for a Phil Kessel jersey, just for an example's sake. You know, those are the types of things that we want to do with 1UP. I'm not saying we're there just yet, that's where we're going.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a real theme this year. I think, you know, you do see a few Chicken Little saying social is dead. I don't think it's dead. I think it's maturing, and it's still a platform you want to be on. But I think 2015 will be when versions 2 and 3, potentially 4, of mobile sites and apps start delivering the functionality that fans want, and they become a destination. Because the first versions were just, like you just said, the repurposed website. Here you can read all the articles. Now we're getting these contextual apps that know where we are, that change depending on what time of day it is, whether it is game time or not. And social is something you want to be driving people into your home base, and that will be the mobile phone. That's, you know, there is the debate: is it the second screen or is it actually the first screen? It's the screen that people are using first, and then it is will drive back to, oh, I better flick the TV on and watch the game because my app's changed. And like you said, there's an alert that's happened. There's been a score. It's a channel changer.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. I mean, but I think in the digital space, we do sometimes get a little too caught up in trying to organize people's screen. The screen that is in this, people will go, because we're in sports, let me try to say this right, because we're in sports and because of the power of live, people will gravitate to the best screen that gives the biggest, best screen that gives them the experience they need around that live event.
Yep.
And if I need to watch my game on my like, to think that in 3 years and that your phone is, you know, with phablets and all of that fun stuff coming down the pipe, that I'm going to choose to watch a hockey game on or a basketball game on my smaller screen. No, I'm never going to choose to do that. I'm always going to choose to watch it on a 55-inch HD in my basement with surround sound and all of that fun stuff. But if I'm in a pinch, I'm going to do it. So it's not going to, I don't think mobile is going to replace, the mobile is going to replace us as a replace the live experience.
Yep.
It's going to augment it, and it's going to make us, every sports marketer, have the ability to talk with their fans in real time all the time based on whether there's a live event or not.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that, you know, we're seeing the debate of getting people to a game, getting them to a stadium versus staying home in their, you know, in their basement, in their man cave with their 55-inch, and what's more comfortable for the fan, because they can be watching on their HD and they can have their tablet or their phone pulling up stats. And some fans are saying that they prefer that. What we need to do from a live experience point of view is enhance that so they can go to the game, and if they want to pull up, a recent goal or, you know, a slam dunk or an alley-oop or whatever, they can pull that up on their phone, and, you know, it's viewer's choice kind of thing. So you're not lessening the experience of the live experience, but, you know, we all know once you're at a game, the live experience does rule, but you've got to cater for those fans that do want that extra information, that extra ability to send it to their friends, or, you know, fire off a tweet and send off the video of that dunk because they're there. All of that kind of stuff is the bit that's developing to say, hey, look, I'm at the event. I mean, that must be an exciting part for you guys, having the venue like Air Canada Centre, that you're sort of owning the whole spectrum of the venue and the team and controlling the whole pipe, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting opportunity. You know, everybody's trying to get there as technology will allow them to provide those unified experiences based on time and location on your mobile. You know, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately as it relates to people coming into the building is we as sports marketers can't forget that we have the biggest screen of all sitting over top of the court or the rink that should be used to augment people's experiences, right? I've been, you know, we've been really thinking a lot about, do and leagues need to start thinking a lot about, you know, there's regulations around what kind of replays you can show during a game. You know, there's, it's not a, I wouldn't call it a broadcast mentality of how you operate your now really robust, really clear, really massive screens that are showing the game in your arena, and you're not using that as a second screen to help somebody see that replay again. If I want to look at the court, I can see the play carrying on. But if something just happened and I am at the far end and I didn't get to see that great dunk or that great score, why can't we show the replay while the play beneath us live is continuing on? Why can't people? Are not people are not going to go think that it's odd, and we need to start transitioning ourselves into this multi-screen universe, even for people who have phones in their hands in arena, but people who realize that there's a TV hanging above the court and we could be able to use that to make their experience better or more like their experience that they're used to in the basement, right? Like it's a really unique thing where the World Juniors were here during the Christmas break, and one of the games, there was games going on in Montreal and here in Toronto, and I was at the game here one afternoon, and there's two games going on simultaneously, and the results of each meant something to Team Canada. So our Game Ops crew, kudos to them, went to, and the game was ending in Montreal, they went to that game on the big screen while the game that was live was being played beneath it. And people were cheering and paying attention to the screen, and it didn't take away from my experience being at a different game. It actually added to it.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I think stadiums will evolve. We're looking at, you know, what Mark Cuban and the Mavs have done in putting in that 3D technology into the stadium that's only going to be played in the stadium on the big screen. So it gives you that Keanu Reeves Matrix style 3D version of the replay. And it's super cool. And you obviously you can see the applications of saying, oh, that'd be great if I could choose that replay on my mobile or on the TV. But what they've gone and done is said, we're going to do it. This is cool technology, but we're just putting it in the stadium as another enticement to get people to the stadium and using the big screen as something other than, oh, that's where we're just going to be showing the vision people cheap seats. You want to be, I guess, maximizing that that screen as well as the small screen in the people's hands.
You know, we've been really trying to, you know, especially in this space, you have to try to do the simple things first and not overcomplicate the experience, because you'd alienate the majority of your audience if you make it too complicated. Keep things really simple. Do the right things for the right person at the right time, and you're probably going to give someone an experience that they're going to want to do over and over again.
So that's a really good example. And I was going through some of the tweets from Seat, and that right data, right time, right person in the right role was quoted. I don't know if you said it or someone else said it during the time. Have you got an example of something that you've done that with either the Leafs or the Raptors, where you've rolled something out in the stadium that fits in that space?
Oh, you know, it's really knowing those moments, right? You know, folks that are in the digital space know this better than anyone, that if you're not listening and looking for opportunities in real time, you're going to miss the boat or miss those things. You see it all the time now with brands trying to jump in on events that are happening, you know, jump in on the Oscars or jump in on whatever. Yeah. We have our own Oscars award show 82 times a year. You got to use those and use the events that happen around the game. You know, even last night in the Maple Leafs game, one of the you know, in a 6-2 loss, one of the biggest storylines coming out of the game was one of our guys took a puck to the face and looked really, really quite nasty, and he came back and played. You know, that went crazy on social. Now, if you're not preparing yourself to take advantage of that opportunity, you're not going to be building audience. You're not going to be you're not going to be engaging because everybody else is talking about that. Why wouldn't the Toronto Maple Leafs be talking about it?
Yep. I mean, is that something? I mean, one I wanted to discuss was the We the North, We Are North, phenomenon that's happened around the Raptors. Is that something that that happened from a fan point of view? Was it developed internally and then just pushed out and adopted by the fans? You want to give a bit of story around that?
Yeah, no, our brand team, led by Dave Freeman, we came up with, in conjunction with Sid Leap, who we work with agencies all the time too, from a brand marketing perspective and from a operations perspective on my end. But, we work with these guys and we're a whole bunch of things were coming together on the Raptors, whether it be, this season's our 20th anniversary, team turned around last year, after a big trade, they started winning, team started the bonding. You could see the momentum, building with, the Toronto Raptors. And, what is one of the great learnings of my career in sports is We the North was going to be good and was going to be launched for the start of this year. But we knew we were on to something when the concept of We the North oozed what everybody feels like as an NBA and a Raptors fan here in Canada. Hockey's number one. Everybody's talking hockey all the time. NBA is a much bigger worldwide brand, but it gets all the attention. And then within the NBA world, the Toronto Raptors are the only Canadian team. You know, we're north of the border. We're the people that are on the outside. And the whole mantra of We the North fit with so well with how everybody who was already a fan of the Raptors already was feeling about the coverage of their team and the way things were going. We just knew we were onto something. And we fast-tracked it when we knew the team was doing well and was heading to the playoffs for the first time in 5 or 6 years. And using the playoffs as a launching point for that movement has just catapulted the entire program, you know, right into the off season with signing all of our guys back to the start of this season and the team really excelling. It just put us in a position to, like I said earlier, make that snowball bigger and make that really capitalize on the momentum. When you know, we can't do that much about wins and losses. That's for sure. As marketers, what we can do is position ourselves to, when things are going good, really keep the momentum going and build it bigger, and really mitigate it when things aren't going so good.
Yeah,
We gotta live in that. In that realm and kind of play the cards that we are dealt, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love that the fact that it was, you know, being planned and it was for this year, but it was, you've got to plan for the opportunity. And what you saw there is, you know, the guys were going on a run, it was hitting playoff, there was a lot of buzz, and you're like, let's roll it out now, because that's, you've got to give the fans the campaign when the opportunity arises. You can't say, oh, okay, we're going to roll out this campaign at the start of the playoffs because that's how our marketing plans were. You've got to have that, be agile enough to say the momentum's there. Let's give them this content. Let's give them this hashtag. Let's give them this campaign and let them embrace it. Because if you'd have rolled it out, you know, at the start of this season, it wouldn't have had the same effect, you know, the amplification of the playoffs and that kind of thing. And now it becomes, you know, it's a secondary brand now for the Raptors and, you know, and all the fans are owning it as their own.
Yeah. It's really worked out, and it just really points to, in sports, you know, you not only do you have to do great stuff, but you have to do great stuff at the right time, in the right place, on the right mediums, right? And that video that we launched before the playoffs really kickstarted everything, and has now become basically the foundation of everything we create, and you know. Whether it be how we're doing our voting campaign now for Kyle Lowry to get him into the All-Star game, or to how we design all of our graphics, and you know, you know, that's what great stuff does. It makes it easy to create when you've got something like We the North. It makes it easy to create content on a daily basis, and that's we haven't necessarily ever done something like that before. We haven't put ourselves in the situation where we have this foundation, and everybody is so clear about the brand, and everybody, no matter what platform, is creating that stuff with that in mind.
Yeah, and I mean, and
it's a great blueprint.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that now obviously you're looking at, how can we do that on other platforms? But it's also, how do you catch lightning in a bottle? To a certain degree, you've got to plan for it and then have these scenarios meet where the team is doing well, there's this groundswell of support, that's the time to do it. It's sort of like trying to do hit makers if you're a music producer. Sometimes they're just done at the right time and they take off, and other times they don't. You've got to be ready to chop and change as the fans respond.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
And so 2015, looking to the future as far as what you're looking to achieve and also from a digital and social point of view, what sort of platforms and activations are you looking for in this year?
You know, we definitely, you know, mobile's our priority. There's no doubt about that. We want to get to that vision that we talked about a little earlier in our conversation. Nobody, you know, I think sometimes you read a lot about what people are doing, but I don't know if I really see anybody who's at the utopia yet. I think a lot of people have great Wi-Fi. I think a lot of people do instant replays in stadium, but I want that in-arena experience on mobile to be taken to the next level, and I want to put the right offer in the hands and on the phones of the folks that are in context with what has happened in the game. You know, I don't want to plan to do a Kyle Lowry jersey offer to somebody for tonight's game. I want to do it when he goes off for 40 points and 10 assists.
Yep.
I want to empower people to make real-time decisions based on what's happened and really measure the effectiveness of what that means to somebody when you give somebody the right offer at the right time on the right platform.
Any other platforms you're looking to target? We saw the Atlanta Hawks just recently had a Tinder night, swipe right for Tinder. They had a marketing night based around Tinder. I'm not convinced that's going to be a platform that a lot of teams are going to be engaging on. Are the Raptors or the Maple Leafs going to start using Tinder, John?
I am not using Tinder, and I doubt that the Maple Leafs or Raptors or TFC or Marlies will use Tinder, but I will not say yes or no. I mean, there's whatever the next Tinder is, whatever the next one is going to be, you got to look at them all.
Yep.
And you got to say, is that the right thing for your brand? That might be the right thing for a great group ticket initiative.
Yep.
That might be the right thing it all depends on your situation, right? Where you use each of these platforms. What I don't see, you know, that core base of platforms that you must be on. You know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know, those core ones, that YouTube, obviously, you need to be there. I don't know if I see anybody jumping up into being into the you need to be there category. I see a lot of niche ones now that teams may pick and choose to create some noise, like Atlanta has done with Tinder, to generate some buzz and get some more bums in seats, because that's what it's really all about in that particular aim. But as far as, I don't see a whole new slew of them jumping up. I think it's about making the ones that you're on, the ones that are really part of people's lives, making them more, following that live mantra and making them more engaging through that, refining your content strategy and doing all those fun things, just making the places where the people already are, bigger and better, and all of that fun stuff. But
yeah, I agree. I think there is that maturation of the social media. You've got the big three of Facebook, Twitter, and Insta, and they're the staple guys. But everybody else, if you want to put YouTube in as a social network, or at least a network you should be on, Google Plus is sort of the where you're going to keep paying lip service to Google Plus because Google is Google. But even Google is saying that they're going to turn it off, and it'll just be the glue that is Google. I don't see another platform coming up and being on that same level as those first three. But it will be a demographic targeting type of thing. So if you want that younger teen market, you might do Snapchat, and that might be where it is. But it's not going to go viral, and it's not going to be. You're not going to have all demographics on it. You're not going to get that volume. Might be wrong. MySpace or something might make a comeback, or there might be something new. But it's so much tougher for a new player to come in. A couple of years ago, it was like everyone was on Facebook, and then everyone started doing Twitter, and then everyone started getting on Instagram. It was like a new one was coming out every year. That has definitely slowed. We're seeing new players, and they're more, like you said, they're more niche. And it will be, whatever your fan, go where your fans are, rather than making the leap and saying, I think this will happen. Once you realize, we've got a whole stack of fans that are in that space or using that app, it's pretty much a similar the way that the Premier League teams and that are all jumping online because it's so big in Asia and it's a messaging app in Asia. So it makes sense for them to engage that audience with that platform. I think that's where it's going to be. It'll either be regionally niche or niche in a demographic.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. The Weibo trend in the NBA is definitely working out in the league's favor. I know the Raps have a pretty robust audience on that, but it's tough for me sitting here in Toronto to try to do stuff with the Toronto Raptors Weibo channel. And institute all the same strategies that we know that work on Twitter or Facebook, and institute those with the language barrier and all of that stuff. It was kind of just a replication.
Yep.
And I think the market is so rabid for that kind of content that it really takes off. But it's definitely worthwhile doing. I just find it difficult to. I'm not sure you can really innovate on there. You can innovate on the other ones and try to port it there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is at the moment taking your content and putting it on that platform and then seeing how it goes. Then potentially, you have to get someone that can speak the native language, that uses the native platform and knows how to do it because, again, you or I aren't going to go on Tinder natively. Going to be an awkward conversation with our partners. So it's just research, honey. Like, you're going to have to recruit people that are using those platforms natively, and whether it is Line or Weibo, where those opportunities lie, that will be when someone gets really, really big success in that space, when they start using it innovatively. But the case for it, whether it's are we selling subscriptions or are we selling more t-shirts, like getting back to that case study, that'll be the question that'll be asked of guys like yourself. Why are we doing this platform, John? That's the question you have to answer.
Yeah, because you can't do them all. You just can't. And I think niche so networks, when they have a business plan and they have money, they'll be coming to brands in sports to get folks to activate on their platform. It helps to bring more audience to them, and I think that's a great business opportunity for brands that are big in the niche space. If you can find the right business deal for yourself to get yourself on those platforms, all the power to those brands. And I would recommend anybody to go out and do that so that you can do some experimentation. But there's that teeter totter effect of there's ones I have to be on, and then there's ones I don't really have to be on. But, to your point earlier too, if I do see a trend coming up, it is what regional social networks can you take advantage of based on the global presence of sports brands, right? And audience now. It's a really good point and something we all need to start thinking about more of for sure.
Yeah, and from a resource point of view, I think it's really important if you're going to tackle a new platform, set the expectations for your fans. So if you're going to use Snapchat, for instance, and just say, well, we're just going to Snapchat shots, videos from training, and that's what it is. We're not going to roll out a fully fledged covering every single thing via Snapchat. But then once your fans know this is what I'm getting, you're not going to get those complaints saying, I want more. And then you can test it with limited resources because you know you're just putting out a post, you know, once or twice a week, and it sets the expectation a little bit better for your fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's you have to set those expectations. It's the best of concept that we've done on some of the ones that we activate on that I would call niche or more niche platforms. I think it works, and then you see what things and what demos you're trying to attack within those niche platforms and go from there. It's really trial and error at that point, and hopefully they do jump you and you make a bunch of sales and you can create some audience on them. But I don't really see a new one coming in, especially in the next year. The new one that gets me and you talking will probably we haven't heard of yet.
Yeah, there's every chance. Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I hope to head back to Toronto one day. I went to one of my first trips to the US. I went to Toronto and actually went to a game at the in Hamilton. Saw the Hamilton Tiger Cats play the Argos, and I was lucky enough to have a tour of the Air Canada Centre back in the 90s. So I hope to. There's probably been a few updates technologically since then. So I'd like to check that out. But until we catch up again at Seat in San Francisco, thanks for coming on the podcast, John.
No, thanks for having me, Sean. I really appreciate it, and you're always welcome here in the T-Dot. We the North, you know.
Sign up for the Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/SGN.
Thanks again to John McCauley. You can send him a tweet at John McCauley on Twitter. And as always, the show notes will have links to connect with John on Twitter, on LinkedIn. Those show notes will be at sportsgeekhq.com/75. That is where every you can pretty much put any particular number after sportsgeekhq.com and you will find a particular episode of Sports Geek Podcast. And you can also go there and connect. And I really do encourage you to connect with guys like John and all the previous people that have been guests. I'm getting very close to the 100 mark, in the nervous 90s, if I use a cricketing parlance. I'm really looking forward to interviewing a few more. I've got some great guests coming up. I've even recorded a couple. I recorded one this morning for a future episode, and it was a great chat. That pretty much wraps up this episode. As I said, I'm very mindful of being too long. I hope to see you all at least from a Melbourne point of view, if anyone else wants to fly in like Christine, at Sports Business Melbourne. And if not, I look forward to seeing you all at Seat. I'm very happy to announce that I will be at Seat London. So the listeners who are in the UK, I'm looking forward to catching up with you, and also we'll have some meetings and some time to catch up with a few people around the time at Seat. So that's going to be March 17 at Lords, and I'll be doing a few preview interviews with people from the UK and from that space, like talking to the CEO of Lords around what they're trying to do with the stadium and things like that. So I'm really excited to go back to London, be able to catch a game and see Arsenal in action, and then catch up with a few more people. So again, if you're in London, you want to catch up, please send me an email or send me a tweet and tell me that you want to catch up. I'd love to see you all there at Seat. At the moment, I think Christine was telling me recently that there's a few more tickets left. So if you're umming and ahhing whether to go to Seat, it'll be a great conference in London. We're going to have the guys from Levi Stadium and the 49ers talk about what they've done at that stadium, which will be a great story for everyone in the UK and looking at that
technological innovation that stadiums are putting in all around the world. And as I've said previously in the podcast, it is a world issue. It is something that all stadiums around the world are trying to solve, and then all teams and leagues around the world are trying to activate with. So that's it. If you're a new listener, please reach out, say good day. If there's a way that we can help you at SportsGeek, again, please send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. And if you have been listening to this episode and you've enjoyed this episode with John McCauley or any of the previous guests, I'd really appreciate a review on iTunes, sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. I'm getting very close to 50 reviews on iTunes, and I really do appreciate the feedback I'm getting on that platform. I do read and take on board every single piece of comments and reviews that we do get. The sounds of the game this week that you'll hear after the segment is from the Asian Cup opening game, where the Socceroos defeated Kuwait 4-1, and I'm really pleased. And if you listen to the episode with Michael Brown, the CEO of the Asian Cup, a big kudos and congrats to the whole Asian Cup team to have some sellouts early. Have a really big crowd in attendance for the Socceroos game. But what's been more pleasing for all the campaigns that we ran is to seeing some really good crowds at the games that the Socceroos aren't participating in. And I've already had discussions with Matt Bartolo, who works at the local organising committee. We've been working all those Facebook campaigns. We're gonna catch up post the Asian Cup and really dig in on what worked, what didn't work from a Facebook advertising point of view, and how we did that to drive ticket sales. So I'm really interested. I've already been looking at the stats. They look great, and we're going to dive in on what worked as far as driving ticket sales to the Asian Cup. So you will hear the crowd go berserk after the Socceroos scoring. With obviously a pro-Australian crowd, we will do that. So until next week, my name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek podcast.
Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at sportsgeekhq.com/clients. Find all Sports Geek podcasts at sportsgeekhq.com/SGP. Like the Sports Geek podcast? Find us on facebook.com/sportsgeek. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek podcast.